Good morning, everyone. I'm John Huckenberry with Andrea Bernstein. Barack Obama has just concluded a comprehensive and, I would say, emotionally charged speech in Cairo, Egypt. Wouldn't you agree with that?
The speech was translated into 13 languages, and clearly it was directed to many parts of the world. There was a little bit of tough love for almost everyone and a lot of emotion
Absolutely.
For almost everyone listening.
We're going to summarize that speech comprehensively and take a look at reaction around the world. We have guests here in the studio, but before we do that, we want to give you the sort of send-off, the final religious and I think probably most emotional cadence at the very end of the speech. This is what Barack Obama said at the conclusion of his almost 60-minute remarks in Cairo, Egypt.
We have the power to make the world we seek, but only if we have the courage to make a new beginning, keeping in mind what has been written. The Holy Quran tells us, O mankind, we have created you, male and a female, and we have made you into nations and tribes so that you may know one another. The Talmud tells us the whole of the Torah is for the purpose of promoting peace. The Holy Bible tells us, blessed are the peacemakers, for they shall be called sons of God. The people of the world can live together in peace. We know that is God's vision. Now that must be our work here on earth. Thank you, and may God's peace be upon you. Thank you very much. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
There, the emotional ending of Barack Obama speaking to students and dignitaries and religious clergy from the Islamic world at the Cairo University and members of the faculty of Al-Azhar University. That was the conclusion of his speech, a nearly hour-long address, comprehensive. He spoke about Iraq, Afghanistan. He spoke about the areas of commonality between the Muslim world and the West. He spoke a lot about history, both American history and world history. And we have reaction all hour long here on The Takeaway with the Professor Peter Ahn, who's the Director of Middle East Studies at Columbia University. And we're going to reprise bits of that speech all hour long. Also, Noah Feldman is with us. He's a professor of law at Harvard University and author of The Fall and Rise of the Islamic State. He's in Boston. And Andrea Bernstein, of course, my co-host, will be with us the whole way. First of all, Professor Peter Ahn, reaction, quite simply.
I think it's a momentous speech. I think we're in a new age of foreign policy for the United States. It had two important things. I think general principles, reaching out to the Islamic world, and then reiterating some very, very hard realities for Israelis and Palestinians. I think his notion of having faith in other people, seeing other people as equals, respecting each other's cultures and religion, was absolutely critical.
We were speaking before the speech about whether President Obama could speak to a billion Muslims around the world. To what extent do you think he was effective to making a speech to a global audience?
If I have a criticism, it's that there is the underlying presumption that all Muslims are observant. In fact, the vast majority of Muslims, like in any religious tradition, are far more culturally identified as Muslims than necessarily observant of Islamic law or they pray, et cetera, et cetera. So there's a sense that you're missing a really large segment of the Muslim population by presenting such a religiously charged speech.
Although, in speaking about women's rights and certain secular successes economically in the Muslim world, he certainly does tip the hat to people who might not view religion as the most important thing in their lives. Noah Feldman, it seems to me that this speech has two big themes. One is very much a diplomatic theme. All of the hot spots were covered and spoken about. But it also seems to address specifically the kind of language that is used between the West and the Muslim world, an attempt to rewrite the discourse. What do you think, Noah?
Well, President Obama said very explicitly in the beginning of his speech that he wanted straight talk and he also wanted to talk about overlap. And I think he did a good job with the latter. He really did try here to talk about values, ideas, that are shared across, broadly speaking, the West and broadly speaking, the Muslim world. I think that was pretty effective, and I think you heard the enthusiasm for that in the audience. I think when it came to the specifics in the talk, it's actually it's a pretty thin speech, and I think in terms of specific policy points, it's not a game changer. It's essentially telling people in the Muslim world, this is our policy, these are the reasons for our policy. We mean well, and we hope that you'll trust our, or at least my, good intentions.
All right, well, let's get some examples exactly of what you are talking about. First, this is a bit of the history, a bit of the symbolism, and a bit of the atmospherics. Wouldn't you agree? Listen to this.
When the first Muslim American was recently elected to Congress, he took the oath to defend our Constitution using the same Holy Quran that one of our founding fathers, Thomas Jefferson, kept in his personal library.
All right, there's atmospherics, but we also have some specifics where he referred specifically to a two-state solution in the Arab-Israeli conflict. Here's Barack Obama a little later on in that speech.
On the other hand, it is also undeniable that the Palestinian people, Muslims and Christians, has suffered in pursuit of a homeland.
There were lots of references to Israel in there, Afghanistan and Iraq. Are you saying, Noah Feldman, that this was an on the one hand, on the other hand style of speaking where he covers bases but doesn't really move anything forward?
I don't know if I would have exactly said not moving anything forward, but I do think that, for example, he's not the first president to speak specifically about the suffering of the Palestinian people. It's good that he mentioned it. He reaffirmed at the exact same time that the Holocaust is real and that the Israelis have a right to security. Again, familiar positions from an American president. He again said that Hamas, if it wants to participate in the peace process, you know, has to honor prior agreements and renounce violence. Again, very much the American policy as it's been. So he reached out in, I think, very creative and sophisticated ways rhetorically, but I don't think on the substance there was really anything new that I heard in the speech.
But Noah Feldman, I mean, isn't part of this about sort of galvanizing, you know, sort of worldwide attention? I mean, I know that when people hear speeches, and a lot of times when I hear speeches, I think, oh, I didn't hear very much new. But on the other hand, I know I'm paying very close attention. To people around the world who aren't paying close attention, to have this wrapped up in one package, doesn't that in itself have a effect of sort of moving the ball down the field?
It does if the general goal is a positive sense of goodwill while people give him a chance to wait and see what he'll accomplish. And I think he did do that. But we have to remember that when former Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice went to Cairo a couple of years ago, she said for the first time that our policies in the Middle East had tried to produce stability and at the expense of freedom and democracy, and we had really failed. And President Bush said our Middle East policies in the past had been wrong. And, you know, people were excited when they said those things, too, but they obviously, in much of the Muslim world in the Middle East, were extremely upset with the policies of the Bush administration.
Right. I mean, the Bush administration was actively pursuing the war in Iraq. They were actively defending Guantanamo. Those were things that Obama got a lot of applause today, saying he was going to change and end. And he went to great lengths to make a distinction about the war in Iraq being a war of choice versus the war in Afghanistan.
Yes, he distanced himself remarkably from the war in Iraq, given that we're still fighting that war, given that to say that we'll remove troops is not the same as saying we don't actually have them there at the moment. So that was, again, a very sophisticated piece of rhetoric. But we still have a policy on the ground of being involved in Iraq, and we still have to remain involved in Iraq for a little while.
Certainly, there's an indication in the reaction in the hall, Peter, that people are paying attention to these lines specifically related to Afghanistan, Iraq, and the hotspots in the world. Nail down and give me a sense, I saw you nodding during the whole speech, of the applause lines and their significance here.
No, absolutely. I think he's setting benchmarks to demonstrate the consistency he will have, hopefully, in his Middle East policy. I think the Bush administration was caught in a kind of schizophrenic bind. They were engaged militarily in unpopular intrusions in the Islamic world, and yet they were talking about previously failed policies. And there was no consistency.
How important do you think the setting is here in terms of gauging Islamic or Arab reaction here?
I think, again, for the Arab world, Cairo has always been, and Egypt, the central power base, though that has decreased, I would say, in recent years. But it's an immensely populous country, I think, still has a great deal of power, and it's an important spot to do this.
And the president was speaking to the leadership in Egypt and also in some of the autocratic regimes around the region, as George W. Bush did as well. More analysis, more reaction to President Barack Obama's speech in Cairo, Egypt, that we've witnessed just ending a few moments ago. Professor Peter Ahn, director of the Middle East Studies Program at Columbia University, and Noah Feldman, professor of law at Harvard, author of The Rise and Fall of the Islamic State, both are with us.